open some interesting questions.
So we'll talk about that in June. Anyway, it's really great talking with you, Bill, and I'm looking forward to talking with you again.
Okay, thank you so much, Barbara. Great to talk with you.
We've been talking with William DeBuise, who is author of A Great Aridness, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we'll talk with Michael Carroll, and his author of No One Eats Alone. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Natalie Merchant. Next week is a pledge drive, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. It is now just 11 o'clock. Coming up on The Boot at 11:30, Between the Lines, you'll hear from women activists who are calling on Trump to initiate regional peace talks with North Korea, plus grad students on a hunger strike for union rights. Tonight at 5 on the KBOO Evening News, an in-depth interview with Mercy Corps South Sudan Country Director Deepmala Mala. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are still not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. And now, stay tuned for Health Watch. Ellen Goldsmith talks with naturopathic oncologist and cancer survivor Dr. Nasha Winters, who has identified the 10 key elements of a person's terrain that are crucial to preventing and managing cancer. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, and I'm your host every second Monday of the month. Dr. Nasha Winter's book starts off like this. Cancer is the most elusive, cunning, adaptable, intelligent, and innovative disease in history, and it has been outsmarting us for a long time. Her new book, co-written with Jess Higgins Kelly, comes out May 18th of this year, and it's called The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, Integrating Deep Nutrition, the Ketogenic Diet, and Non-Toxic Bio-Individualized Therapies. It is a thorough look into the underlying causes of cancer and how to treat it. Dr. Nasha Winter's diagnosis of cancer in 1991 and subsequent healing redirected her focus from studying conventional medicine to one that embodied the concept of psychoneuroimmunology, naturopathic medicine, Chinese medicine, and Ayurvedic medicine. She is an integrative naturopathic oncologist and is the founder, CEO, and visionary of Optimal Terrain Consulting, providing consultations and treatment to patients with cancer in Durango, Colorado. She is a nationally board certified naturopathic doctor, licensed acupuncturist, and a fellow of the American Board of Naturopathic Oncology. She consults and lectures all over the world, training physicians in the application of mistletoe therapy, an ancient treatment used and recognized for the past 100 years by integrative oncologists, and consults with researchers on projects involving immune modulation via mistletoe, hyperthermia, and the ketogenic diet. Dr. Nasha Winters, welcome to Health Watch.
So happy to be here, Ellen. Thank you very much for having me today.
Well, let's start off with, what is the metabolic approach to treating cancer?
Well, simply put, this is about how to provide the most efficient and effective fuel to get those little mighty mitochondria, the little powerhouses of each and every one of our cells, working at their best. And there are ways that we can help that process, and there are ways that we can hinder that process. And we go to great lengths to highlight what that might be within our book.
Well, let's backtrack a little bit for our listeners to so they can understand a little bit about the role of metabolism in health and in disease.
Yeah. Well, we're coming to some conclusions in our understanding of medicine and in particular chronic illness, and that we're starting to get a better sense that the real underlying root cause of chronic illness, including things like cancer, is what we call mitochondrial insufficiency. And these are little organelles within each of our cells that make ATP, which is the energy resource that has us living and breathing and functioning on a day-to-day basis. And simply living on the planet today and living our modern lifestyles have taken a toll on the functionality and the efficiency of these little powerhouses. And we aim to expose the imbalances and correct them.
So when your mitochondria, when this ATP is not optimal, what effect does that have?
Well, often the most common symptom that any of us in healthcare experience, I'm sure you hear this every day as well, is fatigue. And fatigue is basically one of your first symptoms of mitochondrial insufficiency. But basically, when our mitochondria aren't functioning well, they're not doing their job in protecting us from assaults from our day-to-day lifestyles, our day-to-day diets, the possible medications that we might be ingesting, or even toxins from our environment that we might be coming in contact with. So when we're not taking care of our mitochondria, they're not taking care of us.
So in effect, it sounds like what you're saying is that the mitochondria have a really strong impact on the functioning of our immune system and our ability to offset, like you said, insults from all of these elements that we come in contact with every day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even beyond our immune system, it has impact on our stress chemistry. So the way we, of course, none of us can get away from stress today, but the way we respond to it can also be thanks to our mitochondrial function. The way we handle or respond to inflammation can be traced back to what's going on with our mitochondria. The way we deal with too much sugar in the diet is also an incredible source of stress on the mitochondria. And, you know, again, things like hormone balance, circadian rhythms, just our night and day life cycles, as well as just general circulation. These are some of the things we talk about in that concept of the terrain 10, or just different things that do impact our mitochondrial health, and then therefore our overall expression of health.
So you say in your book, you know, we know that cancer can be a terrifying diagnosis, and but as you say, no one wakes up with cancer as a type of a medical emergency. The development of cancer takes a long time. So what are those processes that create the fertile ground for cancer to develop?
Oh, such a good question. Well, you know, there's going to be obviously a little bit of biochemical individuality, a little bit of difference from what may cause cancer in one person to another. But there are some basic things. People like Dr. Thomas Seyfried, who's done an enormous amount of work and research in the concept of cancer as a metabolic disease and has brought back forth ideas and applications of the work of Dr. Otto Warburg from the 1920s, is that basically as our mitochondria age, as our mitochondria get more sluggish and less efficient, we become more prone to illness and to cancer. And so we used to think of cancer as a disease of the elderly or the aging. That was a much more common place to see it, and that sort of fit in the idea of just overall aging, degenerating mitochondria. And then when the mitochondria age and are damaged, then our DNA becomes aged and damaged, and it's harder to clean up the terrain and harder to avoid certain illnesses. But what's happened, especially in the last 50, 75 years, is we are under much more insult and injury to day-to-day things in our environment, from things that we ingest to things that we breathe to things that we even think and feel. And so one person's cause and effect of cancer may be somebody else's, not having that same impact. But ultimately, we explore under the hood what might have been, I guess you could say, the initial assaults or the cumulative assaults. And that might be that you were born with some genetic predisposition. That could be one possibility. The other possibility is that you could have been exposed to some extreme toxic substance that you were unaware of, or perhaps were aware of, say, in your job. So asbestos is a good example of that. And then also, we've also done a lot of study and understanding more and more that just being exposed to trauma in childhood it can increase your risk of cancer in the future. And so there are many cause and effects, but ultimately we tend to make a collection of things that can just make the mitochondria weaker over time.
So you also talk about children. I mean, the rise of cancer in children has been tremendous. I mean, not in a great way. It's been it's skyrocketed, really, in the past number of years. And so can you talk about that? Because there is the question of, when you get older, of course, you have more baggage, so to speak, external and internal. But when you're a kid, you're just a kid, and it's not anyone's fault, right? So can you just talk about those two elements? Because, parents with kids with cancer, really, it's a terrible, terrible thing.
It absolutely is. And it's, and being someone who's worked with children with cancer and has a lot of colleagues and friends and family and patients that have walked that journey, it is. It's terribly challenging, and it makes us feel quite helpless and hopeless. And we made some huge, huge headway in the treatment of childhood cancers. We even saw those rates really drop into the 70s and 80s and 90s in a way that we were feeling like we were actually getting ahead on the war on cancer. We see that even childhood cancers tend to be some of the most responsive to our conventional therapies. They tend to typically do quite well with chemotherapy or radiation treatments. Those kids have very, very voluptuous immune systems that can come back from a good hitting and resolve and recover quite well. But we've taken a turn in the last 10, 15 years or so where we're actually seeing childhood cancers on the rise again, definitely in the area of leukemia where we've seen a dip, but also in the area of childhood brain tumors. And we're also seeing an increase in colorectal cancer in young people under the age of 25. These are relatively new considerations, and a lot of questions are being asked as to the how and the why of this. But one of the things we see is maybe these children, like you said, as adults, we kind of have our layer cake effect of the school of hard knocks of life and experience and trauma and maybe toxic exposure and wrongful diet and things along those lines. But what we're seeing with the kids today is they're basically being born like the canary in the coal mine. they're starting into the world with insufficient mitochondrial function because they're taking on the epigenetic blueprint of their parents, their grandparents, and their great-grandparents. We see that we have this concept of epigenetics, which is above the gene, which are little hiccups in our blueprint that with appropriate diet and lifestyle modification, we can overcome them. But if you aren't made aware of what may be making that epigenetic expression behave in a certain way, then you'll continue the same diet or lifestyle or exposures that make those mitochondria weaker. And so in essence, we're passing it down several generations, and the subsequent generations are getting a bit weaker and weaker. I think you've probably heard or maybe have had guests on your show that have mentioned that the World Health Organization has stated that we're coming to a time where we're seeing children born after 1980 have the distinct potential of not outliving their parents for the first time in human evolution. No one's really asking the questions or doing the research, but I think the things that we're learning in epigenetics are starting to highlight that's probably the cause and effect.
So epigenetics, you say it's like above the gene. So it's like, can you explain that a little bit more simply for our listeners?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, in fact, a recent study just came out basically saying, you know, cancer is just bad luck and just bad genes. It's not that simple. We'd like to think that it is, but it's not. There's actually a lot more control that we have over it. Some studies say that cancers and chronic illness, we have about a 90% chance of controlling that within our diet and lifestyle choices. And so when we look at epigenetics, this concept of you're born with this particular blueprint, you can't change those genes, you can't get rid of them entirely, but you can certainly rearrange the furniture in the room within the blueprint model. So you can make certain diet or lifestyle or supplemental choices that will quiet down certain expressions of the genes or enhance them depending on the desired effect. And so some of those examples are things like methylfolate, for instance. So a lot of a lot of people are talking about methylfolate deficiency or issues today that might lead to miscarriage or that might lead to autism or that might lead to other like thyroid conditions. And if we can do proper methylating foods in our diet and get the right forms of B vitamins, we can actually change that expression and suddenly have wonderful pregnancies and tune down the overstimulation of a child with autism's, their brain, and even enhance thyroid function just by some simple tweaks of the blueprint, if you will.
Right. And this methylfolate you're talking about is really, it's not about taking folic acid. It's
exactly.
The inability or the lack of capacity to process folates in the body, correct?
You got it.
Okay.
You got it.
So,
and that's where we can tweak that a little bit more with our diet or certain supplementation when you work with someone who analyzes your personal blueprint and helps understand the best approach to tune you up and have you expressing at your best.
So let's dive into how you work with people. You have a very individualized approach. I mean, there have been lots of, quote, cancer diets out there, and Wigmore, Gerson diet, macrobiotic diet, go on and on and on. Right? But you're taking a very individualized approach to creating a program for a person by analyzing and looking at what you call the top 10, the terrain 10. And that's really different than conventional medicine. A lot of naturopathic doctors, but you've kind of taken it even to a higher limit, I think. So can you talk about that, how you approach working with people on that level?
Oh, certainly. Well, being someone who's now, as of October 21st of 2016, out 25 years from a cancer diagnosis.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel very happy about that. Still a work in progress. But I just, like every diet you just spouted off, are frankly things I have tried on myself and hundreds, if not thousands, of other patients over a quarter century. And so when you go today and look at what, like you said, there's a lot of diets and books and information and blogs out there about the diet for cancer. And after doing this journey for myself and so many others, it became really clear over time that it wasn't a one-size-fits-all, and that even what your body needs, say, 10 years ago, it's not going to need that today. Depending where you are in the cancer diagnosis, depending where you are in the treatment, depending where you are in the cleanup from the treatment, you may need different things. So instead of imposing basically a dogma or a belief system, I go deeper and assess what the terrain is telling me via a very thorough questionnaire of medical history, family medical history. If I'm lucky enough to have their 23andMe epigenetic data, if I'm lucky enough to have their proteomics or their molecular markers that came along with their cancer diagnosis, I definitely look at all of their laboratory assessment, which tells me a lot of how they are processing nutrients or absorbing nutrients, or even showing me frank deficiencies. And then, of course, just the actual current symptom and state of health. And so that is the information that guides me. So if I have someone say, I do fantastic on a carnivorous diet of an Atkins-like approach, well, that's great, but let's look deeper and make sure that's actually serving you. And let's look at your labs and see. Because a lot of things happen under the hood that we're not aware of. Same goes true for my clients who might be on a strong vegan or raw food diet. Let's take a look and make sure that you're not dealing with any frank deficiencies or excesses in other places. And so, for instance, when I started my journey, I went from a very, very typical latchkey kid standard American diet where the idea of a vegetable for me was canned corn. Okay,
right.
Which, by the way, is a grain.
Right.
You know, that was it, to moving into a diet that was very, very macrobiotic vegan. That was a huge improvement, right? That was a diet that suddenly brought in real food, live food, and it worked for me beautifully for a period of time. My youth was on my side. I was 19 years old at that time. I'd eaten everything out of a box or a can. And so to go to that fresh, real, vital food made a huge difference. However, over a few years, my body started to need something different. And I didn't know then. We didn't have the labs. We didn't have the understanding of what that was. But today, we do. And so typically what I was experiencing then, and what a lot of my clients who get excited and jump onto a kind of a raw food vegan diet, so they're cleaning it up and they're adding those much needed micronutrients from the vegetables that still need to be the base camp. That's probably the common theme in all anti-cancer diets, is a very rich plant-based foundation, which is critical. But I was finding, because I test and thousands of people, myself included, that the typical nutrient deficiencies of a cancer patient are typically B12, magnesium, zinc, selenium, vitamin D3, and K2. Guess what? That's also the typical nutrient deficiencies of vegans and even some vegetarians. And so there is a time and a place where those diets can be very therapeutic, very helpful, but you have to make sure, you have to look under the hood and make sure that is in fact still the case. And also what tends to happen when we're ingesting a full-on plant-based diet, if we're not mindful of our sugar intake, we're also ingesting a lot of carbohydrate. And so at the time when I was a full-on vegetarian doing my beans and rice, I was getting in an average of 300 grams of carbohydrate a day.
Wow.
And even, yeah, right? And that's a typical for a vegetarian or vegan diet. Even registered dietitians that will say that a healthy man should not ingest more than 100 grams of carbohydrate in total in any given day, much less in a given meal.
Right.
And most of us in America, by the end of breakfast, you've ingested 3 days worth of your registered dietitian recommended sugar intake. And so we have gone from 5 pounds of sugar in the early 1900s to 175 pounds of sugar per person per year. And that's a 2014 study. And those are the things that we have just kind of lost our minds in this arena. And I believe that that has been one of the biggest contributors of damage to our mitochondria. I mean, my gosh, that is so sensitive to the fuel source we put into our body.
Yeah,
to go from 5 to 175 pounds, it's hard to keep up with that.
Right. And you talk about, like, it's like pouring sugar over your motor of your car. It's really not going to run very well. So,
that's us.
Yeah, I know. It's a big problem. So what are the 10 terrain? Could you just list them off for our listeners?
Sure. And I'm very visual, so I describe it to people in a visual way. So think of a big tree, and think of the canopy of that tree as the epigenetics, okay, as the overall robustness or lack of robustness of your epigenetics, the way you express. Then think of the soil that that tree grows out of as the microbiome, so the little critters that are within our tube, if you will. The we're just a tube with a body wrapped around it.
Our gut,
so
yeah.
Exactly. And then we have the big trunk, which for me is the mental emotional body. And in Chinese medicine, you can appreciate this. I think of it as the way we connect what we call the heaven to the earth. So our thought process to our emotional kind of rooted, grounded process. And then these seven branches that spin off of that, such as our sugar balance, our glycemic intake, our environmental toxins, our immune function, maybe even co-infection issues, our blood circulation and the health and vitality of our marrow, our mental stressors, and even our stress chemistry. And that includes things like EMFs, exposures, and having too much screen time, say, in the late night, our hormone balance, I talked about inflammation earlier, but that would be one of them as well. And so these are the branches of that tree that fit under the canopy, sit atop that soil, and have the trunk that connects it all. And if any one of those is damaged or malnourished, or overnourished in some way, overfed in some way, then we have imbalance in the whole, and the tree struggles.
That's a beautiful image. So when you work with people, you do a lot of consulting. So it seems like you're almost triaging people. They're coming to you, you're taking all this information, you're adding in more information to help them create a team, an effective team to deal with their cancer, correct?
You got it. And it is a team. It's a team approach. There's not one person or one thought or one treatment that is a proper approach for all. It takes cancer is a multifactorial process, even though it stems from damaged mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
It still has a lot of areas of assault. And so having your team, that sometimes you need the team that's going to be hitting it directly cytotoxically, say through chemotherapy. Then you need your team that's going to be hitting it metabolically, say through nutrition. And then even the team that's going to be working on it immunomodulating-wise. So maybe things like mistletoe or even some of the new targeted immune therapies that are coming out on the market today. You want to hit it from a few different angles, and that could even be from a Chinese medicine perspective, a mental, emotional, like I notice you do mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is one of my favorite tools for myself and my clients to help bring some coping skills to our daily exposure to stressors. And even having an awareness, like having your farmer or your rancher or your local farmer's market as your healthcare team as well, so you know where your food is coming from. Those are very important factors to bring into the team approach to your overall health and well-being.
Right. And you're working with people remotely. They don't have to be in Durango, Colorado.
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, most of them aren't in Durango, Colorado.
Right. Yeah. So if you had to choose one thing to tell our listeners to do for their health, to lower their risk of cancer, what would that be?
I get this question a lot, and I think everyone expects me to say something about a particular food or a particular supplement or treatment. But for me, the most important thing I feel can change the outcome for somebody facing a chronic disease process, whether it be cancer or cardiovascular disease or anything like that, is finding your joy and finding your life purpose.
All right. That's great. So, Dr. Nisha Winters, how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to find out more, and where can they get your book?
Thank you. Well, very excited. The book is available right now, pre-order on Amazon. We're expecting it to hit the shelves by the 18th or 19th of May across the country. And the title of the book is The Metabolic Approach to Cancer. We also have a Facebook page in that same name, just to follow all the book murmurings and where we're doing signings and readings and whatnot. So we'd love to meet you there. And then I also have my Optimal Terrain Consulting website, which is optimalterrainconsulting.com, and also Optimal Terrain Consulting. Follow us on Facebook just to get lots of updates. I'm constantly trying to educate, inform, share information of how we can take care of those little mighty mitochondria.
Well, I really recommend our listeners to get this book. It's an exhaustive book. It has so much information. it's an incredible labor that you did, and it's a great gift to all of us. So Dr. Nasha Winters, I want to thank you for being with us on Health Watch today.
So appreciated. And I wish you and all of your listeners optimal health.
Thank you. We have been speaking with Dr. Nasha Winters, co-author of the book, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, Integrating Deep Nutrition, the Ketogenic Diet, and Non-Toxic Bio-Individualized Therapies. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host. You can listen to this episode and more episodes of Health Watch online at kboo.org/healthwatch.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival. This year, the festival will be held June 30th through July 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Festival passes are on sale now, including the Blues Buddy Pass and the basic 5-day pass at early bird prices. More information about the passes, the festival, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2017.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present